So when was your last checkup? Oh no, not you. Although that's important too, but when was your last vehicle checkup? When it comes to service, nobody knows your Chevy better than your local Chevy dealer. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule an appointment today.
Elise Glink joins us now. Okay, Elise, how have you been?
Oh, good. It's hard to believe we're at the end of July, John. And, of course, a lovely week of summer weather coming up for a change. It isn't going to be 100 degrees, or at least feel that way. And everybody can get out and enjoy themselves.
Do you want to start with the lottery today?
I do, because I am going to win. I've already bought my ticket, so I'm sorry that everybody else will have a losing ticket. But just in case somebody else lands on my numbers, it was amazing to me, actually, that we didn't have a winner for the last drawing on Friday night. And the top prize right now is just about $800 million for tomorrow night's drawing. And this is for the Mega Millions jackpot. Right now, I think we're at the second or third largest jackpot in history. The biggest one was that one we had a few years ago with $1.5 billion. And I think six or seven different groups of people won, and they divided it up. And that's typically what happens when it gets this big, even though the odds are 1 in 350 billion that you're going to actually win, somebody usually ends up winning.
1 in 350 million.
Million. Yeah, excuse me. I misspoke. It just feels like a billion.
I know. Actually, it could be trillion. The point is the odds are so fantastic against you. I always say when we talk about the lottery that what you buy isn't a winning ticket, but you buy the fantasy between the time you buy the ticket and the time you realize you didn't win.
Right, which is why you should buy it the minute the drawing happens and you don't win. So you can fully enjoy your 4 days.
Half a day, yeah. That's fair enough. The taxes on those tickets or winning tickets, have you seen that?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So assume that we've got a $790 million jackpot, which is what it was this morning when we got the report. And most winners are going to choose to take the cash option. So that means you're going to, instead of spreading it out over 20 years every month, which, by the way, is the way that you should take your winnings, so you don't spend it all. But most people will take the cash option. So out of $790 million, you're actually going to get $464 million, a big haircut to start. And then the government is going to hold mandatory 24% for federal tax withholdings, and that is going to reduce it about, you know, another quarter. So that's going to take you down to about $350 million. And then, of course, your actual tax rate federally is going to be a little bit higher. And then we've got the state of Illinois tax. You'll be at the maximum amount there, 5%. So you're going to really only get about 40% or so, maybe 45% of the $790 million. It's still enough to live on, I promise.
Yeah, no kidding. You said that you should take it over 20 years as an annuity. I think most financial advisors say, from a mathematical standpoint, you should take it as a lump sum and invest it. I'm not exactly sure where you're going to put it these days, but that was the old math on that. Are you in agreement with that?
Yeah, actually, math, if you're just looking at the math, yes, you're much better off paying the taxes, taking the amount you would get, which in this case is probably about $320 million. Let's call it $300 million because the math is easier. So you take your $300 million and you invest it. And if you do, and according to another survey today, a 60-40 split of stocks and bonds. Bonds have not, by the way, been a particularly great investment over the last 20 years. But let's just say you do that 60-40 split. You should earn about 6 to 6.5% on your money, which at $300 million is a lot of money, right? You know, you'll earn your, you know, whatever, $18 million a year, and that's, you know, a lot to live off of. The reason, though, that I said that people should consider taking this as a monthly annuity instead, or an annual annuity, is because even though it's less money, it's still a lot of money. And most people, when they win a lottery, are broke Or dead within a couple of years after getting it, John. And so I want to make sure that everybody lives long enough to fully enjoy all of this cash you're going to win.
That's my advice, too. You can't spend money you don't have, so that would insulate you. Although some of these people, my understanding is, have borrowed against their winnings and have, in fact, gone broke even before they got the last annuity check. But to me, that would sort of insulate you a little bit from the worst decisions you could make if you took it over 20 years, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think about it this way. You know, a very large percentage of NBA players are broke within 5 years of leaving the NBA. They make millions of dollars, and when they get out, they have very little left. And anybody, if you look at any of the statistics and the many, many years of research that have been done on people who have windfalls, whether they're lottery winnings or inheritances, within a very short period of time, for most people, that money just gets spent.
Let's talk a little bit about going back to school and what that costs and how much money people are spending and how they're financing that in just a minute. Elise Glink is on a line, and you can always find her at thinkglink.com. She's also the co-host of This Week in Wealth with Tom Fortino. Listen for that Sunday mornings at 6:30 on WGN. So let's talk a little bit about the next big batch of bills people are going to pay, and that's going back, getting kids back to school.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We're seeing consumer debt rise across all income levels, right? And people are actually charging up quite a bit. And the folks who are considered to be upper middle class households, which is probably about $75,000 a year to about $127,000 a year, according to the Fed, they make more money than about 60% of households, and they are right at the top of the list in terms of how much consumer debt they're taking on. And a lot of these families have young children. And in fact, what we're seeing is that the back-to-school expenses are just starting to pile up for people, for parents, and for their kids. And 75% of parents in a new LendingTree survey said they're at least somewhat stressed about paying for the back-to-school expenses. And that's up pretty significantly from last year.
Did you say how much they're spending? How much does it cost?
They are spending, I didn't see, about $409 compared with last year. They spent more, almost $500. And what they're doing is they're spending, I mean, that's a big drop down, right, in terms of how much less they're spending, but they're also much more stressed about it. And what they're saying is that they're making these changes, spending less because of inflation, right? They're trying to find more sales. They're trying to find a way to buy fewer supplies up front. And about 11% are actually buying secondhand items to keep the cost down.
Seems to me like we ran into this too, now that I think about that. Okay, when I was a kid, you went to a public school. It's a public school. You really didn't have money costs except, you know, your pencils and maybe a new backpack or what, a couple of notebooks, that sort of thing. But it seems like going to public schools now, there are a lot more expenses. You still have to pay out of pocket. Am I right about that?
You are. And there are things that people pay for that, I mean, over the last couple of years, they were paying for hand sanitizers and face masks for kids.
Yeah.
But they pay for things like technology. So the back-to-school supplies might include an iPad. There are lots and lots of schools in the Chicago metropolitan area that are, sometimes they assign or they give an iPad to a kid. Sometimes the parents have to buy those. They've got other kinds of things that they need to do for their kids. You know, clothing, everybody grows. Those kids, they just shoot up, you know, year in and year out. New shoes and backpacks. They've got all of the paper goods that they still need. So there's just a lot of that back-to-school expense. And actually, teachers also spend so much money that's not reimbursed that the IRS gives them a special tax deduction.
I don't remember if it was for me or one of my kids, but we had to buy expensive pocket calculators, Texas Instruments, and you'd do your fancy math on that if you knew how to run the thing.
Right.
We also had to buy for English classes some paperbacks, some novels the kids were reading, which, you know, I guess that's all fair. But it just, after a while, a couple kids go into a public school and you've got a supplemental bill besides your property tax there.
Well, you know, over the last couple of years, American households were able to save an extra $2.7 trillion between the first quarter of 2020, so when the pandemic started, and the end of 2021, according to Moody's Analytics. And they got stimulus checks, enhanced unemployment benefits, and we weren't really spending as much. And so all of that savings piled up. But what we're seeing now, John, is that people are really strapped. You know, the higher gas prices, and I know those have come down a little bit lately, but if you've had to fly anywhere, the cost feels like it's double or triple what it used to be. Cost of hotels, the cost of just the food in the grocery store. We've talked about all of this. And so a lot of those savings are coming down dramatically. And
savings
so
are coming down because the prices are still high. But it's, we took several messages this morning from people who are appreciating how much gas prices have come down. They're not what they were pre-pandemic. Nobody's paying two something, but everybody is seeing prices south of five. Hooray. but here's my question. I wonder if people are seeing that reflected in the price of goods now. Are groceries or hardware items less expensive now? I don't know that anybody is writing about that today.
I haven't seen those prices come down yet, and we're also still seeing lots of holdup in the supply chain, right? So there's a lot of focus on gas, but if you look a little bit deeper at some of the headlines in the Wall Street Journal, for example, you'll see that in the port cities out in California, on the East Coast and the southern states as well, anything that's on a coast, there are problems getting container ships into port, getting those unloaded and getting them out. And as a result, you're seeing containers with, I don't know, thousands and thousands of refrigerators, for example, just sort of sitting there. If you drive around and you look on car lots, you're still not seeing a whole lot of cars for sale. So I don't think that we're seeing things go down that way. I just got an offer to buy a 20-year-old, literally, I have a 20-year-old car that our younger son is still driving. It doesn't even have 100,000 miles on it. Drives fine. We just got an offer for $5,000 for that car. It's not even for sale. And 2 years ago, before the pandemic, I think they were telling us it was worth about $2,500. So it just tells you there's not a lot of supply out there.
Yeah, no kidding. I should ask Dave Plyer if his shipments have come in. Our Friday night host and Sunday morning host. He does, his main business is supplying the hardware, the infrastructure for stores on the inside, the paneling and the booths and things like that. And his stuff is made overseas. It gets shipped in. And the last time we talked to him a few months ago, he had, you know, semi-tractor trailers full of stuff just floating out there in the bay, you know, waiting to come in. And I mean, like dozens of them, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of material that he's had to pay for that, you know, the customer isn't going to pay him for until it's delivered. And he's literally floating, if you will, these people while he's waiting for this stuff to come in.
Yeah. There, if you look out, what you see are long, long waiting lists for all sorts of things. And so until that loosens up, right, until we're seeing more things on the shelves, if you've tried to buy fat-free creamer for your coffee, it's almost impossible to find right now. Who knows why? When that all loosens up, I think that's when we see inflation start to come down, and I think it's easier for parents to go and do the kind of shopping they need to.
Any last headline you want us to pay attention to before I say goodbye?
Oh, I don't know. Let's just leave it that. I think we're going to have an interesting week with what's going on at the Fed. And Tom Fortino and I are going to be talking about that this Sunday.
Sunday morning at 6:30. That's the Week in Wealth. And Elise Glinks, the co-host with Tom. Okay, Elise, we'll be listening for that. Thanks for your help today.
You bet, John.
Jim Dahlke joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. He's a senior editor there. You can visit chicagoinno.com to find out more. He always keeps us up to speed on all the venture funding and the tech businesses booming in Chicago. Let's talk a little bit about that and how things are going. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me. Yeah, the data is officially in for the second quarter in terms of venture funding in Chicago and across the country, and things are officially slowing down. Last quarter, local startups raised about $770 million. That's down from $1.6 billion in the first quarter of the year, and down from just over $2 billion in the same quarter last year. It's actually the first quarter that Chicago startups have failed to raise $1 billion in almost 2 years. It really is mirroring the trend nationally, where startups raised about $62 billion in venture funding last quarter. That's about 24% down from the first quarter and a 23% decline from the second quarter of last year. You know, I think what this shows is a few things. One, we're starting to see certainly a slowdown in the venture landscape across the country, but really 2021 is proving to be a really remarkable year in venture capital and startups and VC funding. PitchBook, the group that tracks all this data, says it's actually perhaps an unusual benchmark for VC investment. So the major spike we saw last year is certainly starting to come down, and that's affecting startups throughout Chicago and the country.
I'm still amazed at the numbers. I'm sorry that it's going down. At least we're not an outlier in that. But the amount of money that we're talking about always sounds like a lot to me. Is it a lot? Just like if all of that went away, would it be noticeable in the market? Or is it a big market player, those amounts of dollars per quarter coming into Chicago?
Yeah, it's certainly significant. Chicago's still sort of outpacing what it did, you know, in the 2017-2018 period. So I think you can still certainly argue that the health of the tech ecosystem in Chicago is certainly very strong, certainly a lot of activity. And there is, you know, some reason for optimism, you know, both in Chicago and nationally. Lots of venture funds have raised funding, and actually across the country, U.S. venture funds collectively raised $120 billion so far this year, which is on pace to eclipse last year's total record of $139 billion. So there is money to be deployed, right? There is an opportunity for startups to certainly receive funding. But I do think now the bar is certainly higher, and the venture capitalists are certainly making sure that the metrics are what they're looking for before they spend.
But is that $700 million or billion dollars spent on salaries, on products, goods, and services in the Chicago area? Do we see that as maybe a taxable event here in Chicago?
So we certainly see it in Chicago, and it definitely comes in the form of jobs. So when a startup is raising a big round, certainly quite a bit of that money is going to growth in terms of the number of employees that they can hire and the ability that they have to kind of accelerate revenue from there. So certainly one thing to be on the lookout for is when a startup is raising funding, that means they are adding jobs. So that's definitely good news for Chicago. So yeah, while things are trending down somewhat, still significant when a Chicago startup is raising major rounds, because that means, hey, they're adding bodies to their team.
Talk about Math, M-A-T-H. Who are they? What's the story here?
Yeah, so speaking of a bit of a venture capital slowdown, so Math Venture Partners is a fund launched back in 2014, prominent venture capital firm here in Chicago. They'd raised a couple of venture funds over the years, including $46 million in 2018. They just announced last week that they are not going to raise a third fund. So that means that, you know, the money that they have raised is the money that they have, and they're going to work with their portfolio companies but won't be investing in new businesses. So it's certainly a sign of a slowdown and maybe a sign of the times here. And it's the first sort of public announcement from a venture fund that says, hey, we're pumping the brakes here, not raising another fund. And, you know, really they they sort of credit the current fundraising environment. They said they didn't feel they could get a minimum viable fund that would allow them to support their portfolio companies and invest in new businesses. So certainly a troubling sign, one of maybe potentially more to come if we start to see the slowdown continue in Chicago and across the country.
Speaking of pumping the brakes, I saw a row of those Rivian vans rolling off the assembly line with the Amazon stamp on the side. You're writing about that too, right?
That's right. So yeah, Amazon just last week said that its first wave of Rivian electric delivery vehicles are hitting a U.S. street. So that means they're, yes, coming here to Chicago, as well as cities like Baltimore, Dallas, Kansas City, Nashville. This is a part of an effort that dates back to 2019, when Amazon first invested about $700 million into Rivian, the electric vehicle company, who, of course, manufactures their vehicles in downstate Normal. I have an old Mitsubishi plant. So this is a major milestone for them. Amazon plans to have, 100,000 trucks on the road by 2030. Big environmental push for them. I mean, a big win for Rivian, who, of course, creates electric trucks and SUVs for consumers. But the Amazon play, a big business-to-business move for them as they look to get their business continuing to grow. So a big move for Rivian here. They see an investment that really began several years ago start to pay off.
What's the word on those? Are they good vehicles? Are they? I guess it's too soon to sort of get the reliability, functionality sort of thing on them. Do they hold up, et cetera? But it all looks good, at least.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I've started to see the trucks around town, and they do look great. I will say they are a very slick-looking car, and I definitely think that that's a big piece of it, right? You can't just have the environmentally friendly piece for truck owners. They got to look great too and function great too. And I think so far, so good. So we'll see kind of how, the market continues to adopt on the consumer side. But certainly it'll be interesting to see how Rivian continues to build its B2B business, what other businesses can it partner with to create electric vehicles. Certainly would expect to see more to roll out over time.
Jim Dahlke is the senior editor at Chicago Inno. Visit chicagoinno.com. Nice to talk to you, Jim. Let's talk next week.
Thanks, John.
12:43 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. So let's keep rolling now. We've got more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A leadership change is in the works for grill maker Weber. The Palatine-based company says CEO Chris Scherzinger is leaving and will be replaced in the interim by the chief technology officer. Cranes reports Scherzinger has been CEO since April of 2018. Statement from Weber says the change will better position the company to navigate several challenges, including inflation and supply chain pressures. Weber is also looking at possible workforce reductions and a tightening of global inventory. The company also says its quarterly dividend is being canceled. It's taken more than 800 days, but 100 applicants have finally received licenses to open marijuana dispensaries in Illinois. The Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation has issued 149 licenses as part of lotteries held last summer for 94 applicants. Illinois voted to legalize recreational marijuana 3 years ago. Applicants now have 180 days to get their stores open and receive final approval from the state. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And it's time for the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
And we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. We've been fascinated every morning with Bob's must-hear conversations with Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. And about 1,500 kilometers north of there is this man.
My name is Petri Vantinen. I'm the CEO and founder of Olaf Brewing in Finland.
He's one of millions of people in countries bordering Russia and Ukraine watching the slaughter of innocent people and is glad his country is ending decades of neutrality and joining NATO.
We have our own troubled history with Russia. It's never a bad thing to have some new good friends.
In Finland, he says there is a tradition of toasting milestones, so he and his partner started marketing a beer.
Yeah, we've been making this, some of the people calling it the NATO beer, but now the official name is OTAN beer, which is actually a little bit of a wordplay between the French name of NATO, which is OTAN, naturally, and also OTAN means in Finnish, I drink, I take. Literally, the name of the beer is I Take Beer.
And just as our WGN 100th anniversary beer flew out of the cooler.
The reactions have been, overwhelming. First it was a lager, but then, we ran out of a lager. So we're actually just, canning and bottling everything we have here because the demand is so huge.
And whether it's lager or other style of beer.
Yeah. I've described the beer as having the taste of security with a hint of freedom.
And he says Finnish government officials are fans, and
I'm hoping to get some to Biden as well, but let's see if we can find a way. I know it's shipping beer to the White House is not that easy.
Yeah, how about Putin? Maybe send him a six-pack.
We're only 50 kilometers from the Russian border, so maybe we'll go to the border and throw some cans over the border and hope they will take it, but,
Petri Ventinen, CEO of Olaf Brewing in Finland. Grains for the beer are grown in Finland. The hops are from the United States, where today is National Hot Fudge Sunday Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Here's Sherry Kemp, Vice President of Athletes Unlimited. AUProSports.com is their website. Sherry, welcome to WGN.
Oh, thank you. Thanks a lot for having me.
So you guys are playing softball. This is the dangdest thing. This is very creative at the Parkway Bank Sports Complex in Rosemont with some of the best female softball players in the world, Olympians from several countries, pro players, names the people that like softball sure know. What's going on in Rosemont?
So we will have 5 weeks of competition, and the way Athletes Unlimited is put together, you bring 60 players to one location, and they compete for 5 weeks. It's a total of 30 games. There are six games a week. We play on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We start July 29th and go through August 28th. All those games are on the ESPN family of networks. And also, you are going to see a unique scoring system that's part of Athletes Unlimited, regardless of which sport we're playing. We have four professional sports, but it puts those 60 players in a on a leaderboard, 1 to 60. Each week, the top four on that leaderboard draft their teams. We're getting ready to have our first draft tonight. And they draft their teams. They play three games that week. And then, according to the leaderboard, they redraft and do it again. So we have five drafts, 5 weeks of competition, and you nailed it. You're going to see the best players on the planet right in Rosemont.
So somebody who is my teammate this week may be my opponent the following week.
That's exactly right. When I first heard of it, I thought, no way does this work. But we have basketball, volleyball, lacrosse, and softball, and I'm telling you, it is cool. Fans absolutely love it, and the players love it. It's a lot of fun.
It sounds like fantasy leagues almost, where you are.
Exactly.
Is there a wagering component to this?
There is, actually. There, we have lines up in, I believe, 20 states now. Caesars carries those, so there actually is.
Is that an element of what we're doing here in Rosemont, or rather it's just fun to see these women from all around the world playing with and against each other?
I think a lot of things. First of all, I think it's amazing to see these women play with and against each other. I think it's really cool to see the team switch up. I will tell you, this is the 50th anniversary of Title IX this year in 2022. I can't think of a better place to be than the only venue that was ever constructed specifically for professional softball in Rosemont at the Parkway Bank Sports Complex. So I think anytime you're in Rosemont, it's special. I would say that anytime, anywhere. And we're excited to bring these 60 players there. This is our third season. We launched Athletes Unlimited with softball. We have always been in Rosemont. The players love it. The fans love it. And we're excited to be back.
Who are some of the marquee names? If I said, oh, she's in town, who am I going to go see?
The champion will return. That's Alicia Ocasio. Danielle O'Toole was a player that played professionally for the Bandits. She just won our expansion season that took place in June in San Diego. So she's coming in as that AUX champion. But I think people like Rachel Garcia, who was a two-time National Player of the Year out of UCLA. Sis Bates was the defensive MVP in our season that happened in June. The Romero sisters, Sydney, Sierra, a lot of people know them. And then I think a real exciting player out of Texas named Janae Jefferson is going to be fun to watch. And I just think there are a lot of young players as well as veterans that'll really be fan favorites.
So these ladies are in town, did you say, 5 weeks? So do I buy a season package? Do I show up at the gate? How do fans experience this?
Any and all of that works. So you can buy a season pass and come to as many games as you'd like. Again, there's 30 total games. There's six per week for the 5 weeks. We start this Friday. And or you can buy individual games, individual days, and you get to watch both games on those days. And you can also, it's a really fun group outing too. So, you know, a lot of people will bring young teams or young people, young groups. But I think it would also be a fun workouting as well to just bring some folks. We're launching a new fan area that's called Bar 9, kind of playing off the Title IX celebration. So that's going to be a new placement down the right field line that I think a lot of people enjoy too.
Tickets start as low as $18. Visit AU, as in Athletes Unlimited, auprosports.com, auprosports.com to find out more. I guess you can buy your tickets there. $18 is less than a lot of other pro sports in town, so it sounds like a fun package.
I think it will be. I hope a lot of people come see us. That's why we come there. We had great crowds last year. We did not get to have crowds at all in 2020.
Oh, yeah.
We opened the doors last year, and we were really pleased with that. We know it'll grow again this year. So thanks a lot for having me on here.
Okay, Sherry. Good luck to all of the ladies that are playing at Parkway Bank Sports Complex. That's in Rosemont. I didn't realize the only venue in the country built specifically for professional volleyball, softball.